When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I think revivals are just a wonderful delivery system for adults with jobs who can't get high at camp.
Welcome to Holy Ghosting, a podcast about deconstruction from your middle-aged mom friends. I'm Lindsay, and I am ready to spill the tea on the Biola revival of 2000.
And I'm Meg, and every revival that I went to was in a tent, which means there was some event coordination going on.
And I'm Sarai, and I still, to this day, can't hear the song, "Yes, Lord, yes, to your will and to your way," without fully dissolving into the shakes because, man, I've been to some revivals that said that a lot of times.
Yes, Lord, yes. Well, bitches, we're talking about revival today.
Revival in the land.
Yeah, yes. Do you feel it? Do you feel...
Do
you feel the Carmen in this house tonight? It is impossible to talk about revival without our Italian stallion, Carmen.
That's right.
He is Italian, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He has to be.
Yeah. I think I mentioned before he's a self-proclaimed Guido. Okay. He says it a lot in Spirit Pizza.
It's funny. I was going to say Guido, but then I was like, is that racist? But then
I really hope it's not.
I don't know.
If we find out it is, just bleep me there, okay?
Sorry. Yeah, we learned it from Carmen, people. Sorry.
It's Carmen's fault. It always is.
Unless you've been living under a rock, many of you probably know that there is a revival going on in Kentucky, right? Is that where Ashbury is? So it's been a little bit funny. It's been a little bit triggering, if we're being honest. It's unlocked some core memories that I didn't even know that I had. And I had completely forgotten about some of my revival experiences. And so it's been interesting watching it play out. And in fact, I know that revival went viral on TikTok, and I specifically have not watched a single video of it on purpose because I didn't want to. I wasn't ready.
Wow.
Vibe. Yeah, so that'll be, but then I was like, let's record a podcast about it because naturally I won't watch any videos on it, but I will dissect it.
You know what? I don't need to be re-triggered by somebody else. I can be re-triggered by my own trauma. It's fine.
Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. We're all okay. Okay. We're working on it.
But you know what? This is the way that I am not re-triggered is by actually just having open conversations about it where it's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay that we had these experiences. It's okay that we participated in these ways. And now we can learn from those things and maybe, you know, keep from harming people in the same ways again. So I'm here for it. Let's disentangle.
Totally. I mean, and like what a safe space that we have to talk about it with each other. And also I'm fascinated to hear other people's experiences of revival because chances are, if you grew up evangelical and or charismatic, you have experienced some revival in your life. And that may look very differently. And maybe you didn't even realize you've experienced revival, but did you go to summer camp as a Christian? Because let me tell you, there's a lot of mini revivals happening at summer camp.
You've been revived.
You've been revived.
If you've ever sat by a fireplace. Oh, I'm sorry, outdoor fire area.
If you've ever sang refiner's fire. My heart wants one desire.
Yeah, okay.
It's a banger right there.
All the campfire songs.
Yeah, all the campfire songs. So I'm going to hit you with some fun facts about revival.
Yes.
Did you guys know that the word revival is not found in the New Testament? Neither Jesus, Paul, nor any other biblical writer encouraged prayer for revival, in fact.
They did so not encourage
they did not.
Revival?
Nope. Mind
in
blown.
The land?
In the New Testament, they did not call for revival in the land. Now, there are things obviously can be interpreted as,
yeah.
I know people take like the church in Acts as a thing. You know, there are calls for the awakening of the spirit and to be holier and things like that. But the
like
word revival.
Like the day of Pentecost.
Right.
Would that be considered a revival adjacent event maybe?
I believe so. But the word revival is not in the New Testament.
Well, it hasn't made its way in yet, but I'm sure after this episode they're going to do some revisions because you can't not have that word in the Bible in the New Testament, guys.
Well,
that is the roadmap.
Second chapters of Acts is more of a revival because it was the first revival, and
oh,
then
it's right.
all
so
revivals
re.
After that. So that's right. the only one that mattered in the Bible, maybe
the one revival,
just a revival.
Got mm-hmm. it. Okay,
a revival in the Bible.
Yeah, and what is I should have done a little bit more preparation, but there's I feel like the one main scripture I want to say is it like Second Chronicles or something is the one where we will call on him and he will heal our land. That is the one that I think is used at least in my circles when I'll put it in the show notes, people. But you guys know the scripture I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, it's basically calling
like,
out to the Lord.
It's used as a call to action, right? For the
correct.
Current day Christian to revive the land.
Yes.
Yeah.
Revive.
Exactly. Heal the land. Our land. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, in prepping for this episode, a lot of modern Christians take this to mean, you know, like all these divides that we have in our society and all the problems and all the drugs and the abortions and like revival is gonna, if we
God,
get together.
I'm sorry, just the fact that we are talking about the drugs and the abortions and that it's like the persecution that comes with, I choose these things for me, why don't you choose them for you? Therefore, I am being harmed by your choice for your life. Is really tough to sit with. And in particular, when that then correlates to the land is broken, the land is corrupted, that then means every person who is a part of this world right now, it's a really harsh way to think about your neighbor.
Yeah. That sums up evangelicals in its entirety.
I was going to say, that's the job. That's the job.
It's a harsh way to think about your neighbors. Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. That's it's check done. You get paid now. Go.
Oh, I figured it out. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. Pass go. Collect your $200.
Okay. I'm now ready for my next stage of life.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, again, I was trying to wrap my head around going, it's like, what does revival mean? It means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I think the word is thrown around a lot in Christianity. And so some people, like there's this one theologian who says, it's an extraordinary movement of the Holy Spirit, which produces extraordinary results. That sounds like big and exciting, but like, what the
fuck
does that actually mean?
It's
what
vague,
are the
really
results?
Vague.
Show me the results.
What
need
are
to
these?
See that shit.
Right. What are these amazing results? And then, but honestly, in like digging, what it seems like it actually comes down to, and I don't even remember where I found this, but like it was on some weird Christian website, and it said that like there's a form of revival for believers who have fallen into a state of complacency. And they're kind of unpacking the Webster's definition of revival. So it says the first two Webster's definitions listed would speak to that form of revival. We Christians are human and we are still sinners, though we have been saved by grace. And we can get prideful thinking that as long as we're saved, that we can glide through life.
So
what I remember from
it's not the backsliding Christian that we're looking for. It's the complacent Sunday sits in the seat and that's it Christian that we
you're not showing up early to stack chairs.
Yes.
You've grown complacent.
Unstack chairs first and then stay late to restack.
To them. Correct.
Those are the people we're trying to get during a revival. So potentially the goal is get people here more often, more times, participating in more of our things because we're going to guilt them into feeling like they have not, like that they're just, quote, gliding through life. What a weird way of saying
also,
that.
Also, can we just take 1 second? Did any of you, while you were in the throes of your evangelical life, ever feel like you were gliding through anything ever?
Like, oh my God, it was constant work, constant, like internal second. Agony of, ugh. I wanted to get to that point. I remember that. I think maybe that's what drew me to revivals is like, I'm not trying to glide through. I'm trying to do the work. I'm trying to be present. More youth groups, more, you know, conventions, more places to go to like re-experience or make sure that I'm saved was my whole thing of like, I want to make sure I'm saved. It's not about backsliding. It is really just about that fear of losing your salvation.
I think revivals are just a wonderful delivery system for adults with jobs who can't get high at camp. Like, because we were always talking about, oh, when you go home, this camp high is going to go away. And we're all like, I don't know, we're full of dopamine or something is happening. Like, we're just going to cry and feel refreshed and have a catharsis and then go home and be like, I'm so devout. And then maybe your church will just have a revival or bring in a tent. Get it again.
It's a lot of like pressure to put on a revival.
The evangelical way. There's a lot of pressure put on like everything. But that's why it's so interesting that I feel like calls for a revival are just a particularly, they're just intense, right? Mm. And it feels like Christians, when things are maybe feeling out of control, maybe culturally, they feel like they're losing the culture war or whatever, but these prayers for revival, like we need this giant sweeping change, although I would argue that it's not change. It's just like it's a large emotional experience where people feel more connected to each other and to God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like,
that's a concert. That's a live event with people. I get it. Like, I get it. Intense- and we're all kind of craving that after this pandemic life. I totally understand where this is coming from and how it's filling a need in people, right? And that's the part where I'm like, I'm not against that. I'm not against filling that void, that space. I just think that when it happens in certain ways, people are manipulated into something that is maybe not the goal that they have or the agenda for their own life, but that is really somebody else's goals that are just going to be channeled through them. And that feels, yeah, it feels icky. I don't like that.
Well, here's something I think you are going to like. So I'm going to have you. I mean, this might make us feel a little icky. I am so curious to see your reactions. Let me see if I can share my screen here. Y'all, we're going to fucking watch Carmen's Revival in the Land.
Oh, fuck. Yes!
You guys, I don't know if I have ever seen.
Get ready. You are in. You have got. You're in for a treat. You're in for a treat. I watched it this morning in preparation and it blew my mind. And I was like, us watching this together for this episode is going to be.
Okay.
It's going to put us in the right headspace.
This anticipation is a lot for me right now. Is this like he's here in a black suit, mic up to his mouth with a gold tie? It's a good suit, too. I'm actually kind of surprised because whatever year this was in, I did not expect for him to have a suit that looked this good.
Like, you would think he was wearing a big, fluffy 80s suit,
like, I would
right?
have thought it was going to be a double-breasted, you know, that 80s, it's my, it would, like, pleated pants. But no, not Carmen. This looks like
he was a true showman. Suit. A true showman.
Oh, my gosh. Ghosties, hi, it's Meg. Now is a perfect time for you to pause this episode and go to our Patreon to watch Carmen's Revival in the Land video, including our hilarious reactions. This post is going to be available for everyone for 1 week, so go check it out or sign up to be an eternal ghostie at patreon.com/holyghosting so you don't miss any extras from us in the future.
If that doesn't make you want Revival in the Land, I don't know what does. I mean, that man can pump you up. So I just showed these ladies Carmen's Revival in the Land. It's from a video from a live performance, but which he shows a pretty Carmen was known for his theatrics and his skits and his talking intros. Lots of demons in Carmen's.
I just want to share one of my favorite things Carmen always does is like over explains a disgusting disturbance in the force of something. Like, he has to give it 1,000 adjectives that don't quite fit, but he's like, he's just with it and doing it. And you're like, what is going on? He is saying some words. I love it. Okay, go on.
So,
Meg, you've never seen this before, right?
No, I've never seen that.
I cannot believe that.
I know almost every single word to that song. I was very surprised at how fast it came back to me. First of all, that was my first thought, was I was like, oh my gosh, I think I know this verbatim. This is one of the skits that we used to do in Action House, which I've briefly mentioned, that we would travel around as youth and do these performances. And so this Revival in the Land was one of the ones that we would do. Carmen created a lot of content for us to do for Action House. But I noticed a few things. Like, this whole video is him on a stage that looks to be like there are some palm tree elements and some building as like backdrops, like painted scenery behind him. It's him with a microphone and a monitor on stage, and that's it. There's no band, there's no backup singers, there's no large scale production elements. You know, there's some basic lighting and some set design. But in this music video, there is a pretty, you know, I think for the era, a pretty high budget production. There are fire elements because it's hell. There's this massive throne. There's a point where Satan is kind of running and there's like pyrotechnics going on. They explode his throne at the end of it. I mean, there's some
and Satan's
budget.
Teeth, like the wardrobe, the makeup, yeah. Like Satan's
the makeup,
teeth
are the
gnarly.
Wardrobe.
Yeah,
I mean, the big ears on this demon character. I also noticed for the first time, maybe, both of these voices, both the demon telling Satan what's going on in the world and Satan are both Carmen's voices.
Yes.
Pitch shifted, right? Or something, like put through a modulator. I didn't realize that. So he is really truly a one-man show.
Yeah.
And I got to give him props for that.
Did you never go to a concert, a Carmen concert?
No.
God, I'm so
I never
sad.
Got to experience him in real life, which I think probably, you know, breaks my 9-year-old heart.
It does. I went in 2004.
It probably means you have less religious
time.
Trauma. Wait, 2004 you said?
Yeah, because I graduated from college. And we found out that Carmen was playing at a church in Wichita. And my mom was visiting, and me and my friends and my siblings decided to make my mom go with us to a Carmen show. And it was so fun and so hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. I think because I saw him then, like 92 or 93,
oh, yeah.
Like old
I
school,
saw
like
him
way
a
back.
Bunch of times then because I, like, man, I was a big fan, obviously. We may lose some battles, but we will win this war is something I still say all the time.
And I forgot that he was the one. I can't remember if he came up with this phrase and then it was on Christian t-shirts or vice versa. I assume he came up with it. The, like, if Satan reminds you of your past, remind him of his future.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Almost the same exact lyrics of Witch's Invitation, which, of course,
that's
right.
True.
Yeah. Reigns supreme
there is some
in my heart.
Right. Yeah, there's some repetitive themes going on in
the Try Bought
song.
With the right. Blood. It's like that kind of stuff.
Which is kind of funny, though, because isn't Revival kind of all about, like, confession and about not being complacent and about remembering how terrible you've been and, like, getting right with God? So that is remembering your past. So it's like, is that what Satan wants or is that what Jesus wants or do they both want that?
Oh, my gosh. That's a
Are
really
they the same
existential
guy?
Question.
Just saying, like, that was my thought when Satan was like, you know, remind them of their past. I'm like, but isn't that what they're doing when they're, like, praying and they're repenting and they're going through, like, all the horrible
things?
Yeah,
we are supposed to be reminded of our sinful nature, right? That we need a savior. That's kind of the gist of it. It's like, remember all these terrible things that you used to do. You don't want to go back to those things. So therefore, revival.
Yeah. Well, and also whatever it is you're doing, like, maybe you're not like stacking chairs enough. So, like, you need to repent of your complacency. You're just gliding through life.
Yeah. More importantly, you should be winning souls for the Lord.
More importantly. Or scaring the hell out of them.
That's right. So they don't go to hell. A part of this for me is really clearly about when I experienced revival, or the context for it was always about revival of the land. It was like Christians taking back culture and like movies are bad, like Carmen is saying in this. And by the way, if you choose to watch this video, huge content warning. It shows it's an aborted
wildly triggering.
It's it
shows a lot of horrific
lots of
car accidents and
It's not emotional. For children, I guess. That's the other bizarre thing.
But it was for us. Yes.
That, like, we were like, don't take a kid to a drag show, but please take them to a Carmen concert and let them be exposed to, quote, these horrific things that evil people do. I mean, there is a lot of imagery that is shown in that video that I think is really, it is really terrifying. Obviously, when I was a kid, I reacted in like, I don't want to go to this burning place or live in a world where all of these visual things or things he's talking about are happening, because they don't sound nice. Like, the way he describes it doesn't sound nice. So,
you guys, I think I had a realization. Remember when we were talking about hell houses, when we were talking about Halloween and how much I think they're hilarious? I think Carmen, his entire catalog is literally a hell house.
Oh, it's like 100%
just in itself. You don't have to go in at all, but everything he ever did was literally, it's a hell house. And
his whole thing is scaring the hell out of you. Yeah, it's very, his whole thing is really like bombastic. Maybe that's the word. It's really like in your face. And it's just like, but he's
speaking the truth.
I thought he just was doing like
showing me the truth, like being so like a gentle, kind, you know, guy who was going to take me and show me like, okay, this is just the world you don't want to be a part of, right? And I was like, absolutely. Well,
and it's a slightly different tactic than I think a lot of evangelicals, because I think rather than, obviously he's afraid of the culture, and but he comes at it in this like, we are powerful and prayer and revival and boom, boom, and we're going to fuck you up, devil. Like, it's this war mentality, which I don't think a lot of people are saying. So he is scaring you, but then he's also like, but we got this, fam.
There's that moment where he talks about like the army, like what is the line where he's like, we all, you know, rise up and come together, and it's like, we're going to win that war. Like, we may have lost some battles, we're going to win the war. And there is a lot of verbiage around war. And yeah, I don't like that. It's a male, it's a very, in my mind, a male approach to salvation is to go at it not through a nurturing, loving way, but to go at it through this fear, warmongering, battle, destruction. Like, we got to burn it all down before they burn us down.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Because that's exactly what we did with the Iraq war and the war in Afghanistan too. So, I mean, this is where Christian nonsense and dominion and fighting and war is once again directly tied to our fucking foreign policy.
Yeah. Well, the Carmen thing is interesting too, because it's like no wonder he resonated so well with white evangelicals.
Yeah.
Like, which was run by white men, you know, like his whole thing. And like I said, he just like was a clever marketer. He's a great showman. And so the way he sold it just felt different than, I don't know. It just, yes, it was scary, but I think there was something like, you know, it just felt like badass or something. But we could talk about Carmen. Yeah.
There was a little bit more like power. Oh, of course. I could talk about Carmen forever. I do think Carmen's ability to get the male side of the aisle to kind of join in and participate. I get that there was a thing that would attract a male, you know, person to that exciting, explosive, fight it out world. So I get it. I don't like it, but I get it.
Yeah. I just have one final proposal on the Carmen front. I think that Holy Ghosting should produce a Greatest Showman style film about Carmen specifically, because wouldn't it be so fun?
Oh my gosh.
I'm gonna start working on. I'm gonna storyboard that.
Okay, great. Get a GoFundMe going.
Okay. Yeah.
Who's gonna play Carmen? That's what I need to know. We got to think through.
Oh God.
It's like. What Italian stallions do we have out there in Hollywood right now that would care to play? We'll think on this. Yeah, we'll Ghosties, think on it. Give us submissions. Tell us who needs to play Carmen in our future film.
Crowdsource.
Because I'm not a casting director, but some of you certainly are or have better ideas than I do. So now I want to get into our experiences of revivals, because we ladies have seen some revival in our land. So Meg, you want to kick us off and tell us, like, what's your experience with revival? Have you I heard in your intro that you've been to some tented ones.
You know, I feel like all of the ones I went to were in a tent, and which just now as an adult I'm realizing, you know, having done producing and event coordination, it takes a lot to get a massive tent into a space with all of the chairs. We know we got volunteers for it, but we still got to get all those chairs. And then there's like the audiovisual elements and the, you know, who's the leadership of this revival and are we putting them up places? I just know that the production of it all was a lot of effort and energy, which means it didn't just pop up one day and appear. And all of a sudden it was like, the Lord brought this here. Like, it was a planned event. And I mean, the one that sticks out to me the most was a revival that I went to where there was in my circles, there was always like prophecy was a part of revival. It was like, if we're going to have revival in the land, then we need to call upon mostly young people to get that, like carry that spirit forward. Like, we need the young people to feel spurred on to make it possible. So I do think that although there's a lot of adult participation in these revivals, I remember a lot of the youth group kind of being moved to the forefront or being called forward to have prophecies over. That's where I was prophesied over. And that stuck with me. I mean, it still sticks with me. It stuck with me for a really long time. And it's an odd thing to think a person who doesn't know anything about you is telling you that they're hearing from God, your creator, and that they have a word from the Lord, and that that word from the Lord is fact, and that it is, there is, like, that's it. And so when you hear it, you don't have a choice. This is a inevitable future for you. And now as an adult, like, that shit's fucked up to just tell a young impressionable kid, like, I know the plans God has for you, and here they are, and here's the way that you need to live your life. That for me is the thing that keeps coming up, hearing about revival happening, is that emotional manipulation that I felt, I'm really concerned that other people are going to experience a similar thing. So it was at the time something that I felt really inspired by and felt like, oh, I have a direction. I have a goal. I have a purpose in life. And God really does notice me. Mm-hmm. And that was a really beautiful thing to feel. But I get more concerned about what that means, like how that changes who we are and the goals that we maybe, you know, wanted to have for ourselves as young people, and how we were kind of led to a different place. And it's interesting because that idea of being led astray by Satan or the devil or like the worldly things was so clear to me. But being led astray by the people that say they're hearing straight from God, like, that's something I really have to reconcile.
Where were these revivals that you went to? Was this what state was this in?
Everyone that I participated in was in California, and they were like large churches that, it wasn't this idea kind of like what's happening right now or what happened in Biola in the early 2000s. Like, it wasn't a national like attention kind of a thing.
Right.
I didn't participate in, you know, I didn't like seek them out. I didn't go to like, oh, I'm going to go to them. They were usually associated with the church I went to, or, you know, our youth group went
and they were to one planned, that another
church was having. Yeah,
yeah, they were, and they planned were just event. Like
planned events. Yeah.
Which is so funny, the thought of weird. Planning a revival. Mm-hmm. I know that that's mm-hmm. a yep. thing, but with what's happening right now, clearly it was like unplanned. And the one I experienced that I'll get into in a little bit at college was also unplanned. How many people went to these things? Like, were they huge?
Yeah, it was like, you know, all of the churches in the area were kind of invited. I think that's why they did big tents, because they just right. put them out in these giant fields, and they were like, we can kind of have everybody come. And it was meant to be a invite your neighbor, invite your friends from school. It was like, it's which is so odd because you're like bringing somebody to this massive event where they're going to be singing a bunch of songs and behaving in a way that feels very much like a concert or like a live, you know, event. But
I thought you were going to say cult. I thought you were going to say.
I thought so too. I was like, yeah, it does sound like a cult.
Yeah. Nope. I'm describing exactly that behavior.
Yeah. So, was there an altar call, I assume, at the end of every
constant,
night?
Of course. Constant. It wasn't even at the end. It was like spontaneous. During worship, there's an altar call. During a prophecy thing, then there's another one. You know, and it's like if
one
any
big
moment.
Altar call.
Yeah. Yes. If any moment spurs on the ability for the person with the microphone to call people out to repent, it was like a constant call to repent. And if you're repenting and being vulnerable and going up to a person and they're like, what are you here to repent for? And you're just verbalizing like all of your shit that's in you. That's so intimidating and so revealing. Of course, you're going to feel some like spiritual bond or connection with these people that are surrounding you, because that's what happens when you are vulnerable around other humans, is that you bond with them. And I get, my biggest thing was always like, who are these people? I'm walking up to people that I see every day that I know. You work at wherever. You're not a trained therapist. You're not a counselor. You're not a psychologist or a psychiatric person with skills in any of those places. Like, what?
But they might be on the prayer chain, so they can take it to the Lord on your behalf, slash gossip about it to everybody.
Yeah. Pray chain was the best form of gossip. It was it was a holy gossip.
It's a magic,
which I will say, like, I'm just putting this out into the universe. I really want to do collaboration pod with Normal Gossip. So if anyone knows Kelsey McKinney, I think she's a former church girl.
Yes,
and
she is.
We want to have her on the pod and we want to talk to her about gossip. So
I like holy gossip so much. I just thinking the other day about how much we need like an offshoot part of let's just like talk some shit.
Yes, we need a holy gossip episode. So, Kelsey, have your people call my people. Sarai, have you revived? Have you been revived, my friend?
Have I been revived? Okay, so yeah, like my real revival experiences were exclusively camp related, unsurprisingly, because of the quantity of time and dedication to camp that I have to this day.
And also, I feel like the Free Methodists are not big revival people. Right?
Oh, no. We were not charismatic at all. So it wasn't like the kind of revival that was like prophecies and shit like that. It was honestly like I remember when I was in sixth grade, there was some guy. I mean, it might have been the piano player's dad or something who came for like a week of revival services. So it was like every night we went to church, which was more nights than usual because sometimes we didn't go on Mondays. We were there and I remember it was just like kind of boring, like Sunday night church style. Like Sunday night church for us was always like chiller and like not as fun as the Sunday morning and not as many people were there or whatever. Like they let me lead worship and I was like 12 or 15 or some shit, like play the piano and stuff. But yeah, I remember I was 11, but the main thing that I liked was that my friends were there and we were all hanging out a lot. But can I just tell you a really tragic story about my experience with revival and perhaps why I've never taken it seriously again? I was going out with a boy I had a huge crush on forever, and his best friend was there and my best friend was there, and my best friend was really mean. She has died, RIP. But that's sad. But when I was a kid, girl really fucked with my head a lot. So I'm sitting there, all three of them get up, they leave, and then they come back and my best friend hands me a torn up picture and it's just the eye from the picture. And I was like, that's my eye. What happened? Why is my eye torn out of my third grade school picture? I had a little birthmark. You can't see it anymore, really, but like it was right here. And I was like, that's obviously my eye. And the other day I was zooming in on a selfie of myself and looking at my eye and being like, why am I so familiar with what my eye looks like? And then I remembered this story. And so it turned out that like my friend had been like, the boy you like tore this picture up and threw it down the toilet. And I just saved the eye. And I was like, why are you guys being mean to me? And I cried a lot. And that's when I discovered the Book of Ecclesiastes that night. So everyone else is having a really fun revival. I'm just hearing the song, Yes, Lord, Yes, played 10,000 times, staring at my eye from my third grade picture and feeling rejected by everyone. And yeah, that's that. That's not a real revival story. But I mean, in all reality, I did go to a tent revival once with my best friend. Not the mean one, my high school best friend, Amy. And I think it was her grandma wanted to go. It was in Canby. It was in a tent. I don't remember anything about it.
Was it a big tent revival?
It was a big tent revival. No, it wasn't that
big. Does anyone remember that band?
There was
a Christian band called Big Tent Revival. Sorry.
I do remember that. Yep. Good job. Mm-hmm. Good job.
Just bring always it back with those to CCM.
Music archive.
Honestly. Yeah. For someone who minored in CCM, I'm really slow on the uptake with a lot of
yeah, you really dropped the ball on that one, sir. Yeah. I lobbed you a softball there.
I'm going to have to go and turn in my degree.
At least turn in your Christian card. I think you did that a long time ago.
That's been done.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed. I fell out in the river.
It sure did.
Anyway, so my revivals were more camp related and more related to the excitement and the joy of being with people and singing and having emotional experiences. Again, because it wasn't something that happened in other spaces I was in, because it was always very guarded and very much about behavior, appearance, correct beliefs, whatever. So, revival wasn't a thing for me exactly. But I also had heroes. I loved Amy Semple McPherson, who led a bunch of revivals and started the Four Square Church. As a kid, I was like, girls can do that? And I was stoked because I'm like, that's right. That's what I'm going to do, bitches. Lead these tent revivals? Hello. That would be so fun. I'd still do it today, except for I wouldn't, because it would be unethical.
What do you think was the purpose of those revivals? Did you have an idea as a kid of why you were going or what it was for?
Yeah, I mean, I think on that personal level. But like I said earlier, I think for us, religion was always really political. And so in a lot of ways, I feel like revival wasn't called for us. It was heal the land, make these people less sinful, eradicate Sodom and Gomorrah from our culture or whatever. You know, it wasn't said that way, but it was really about make this a safe place for Christians to not ever be challenged in America. That's sort of what the revivals were about in my kind of experience as a kid.
Mm. Oof. Yeah. I have experienced a fair amount of revival in my day. probably not surprising to anyone who's been listening that I was skeptical about them.
a little
doubting Lindsay. Because my mom went through a big charismatic phase when I was in junior high. And this is when the infamous Doubting Thomas prophecy happened. Our church that we went to, that my dad was a pastor of, was not charismatic. But my mom would take us to go visit the charismatic church in our small town where they did the fucking streamers and the dance. This was the phase.
They're called worship flags, Lindsay.
Oh my god.
Gosh.
I forgot we had a vineyard.
I've
tried to block so much of this
vineyard
out.
Person among us. They love banners. Yes.
Well, so my mom was big into Vineyard. And at this time, the Kansas City Vineyard was the place to be. There was revival happening there. This is when the laughing was happening, getting slain in the spirit. And for those of you who don't know, in charismatic circles, there was, I don't know if it's still happening, at this time, people would get prayed over and they would just fall down laughing, or they'd just laugh for hours. They just, because they're filled with the joy of the Lord, or getting slain in the spirit, they'd put their hand on you and they'd fall over. There had to be people there to catch you, because you literally would just
basically faint. It was almost like a,
Yeah. And then
I'd love to laugh for hours. That sounds
amazing. Who knows how long, right? I know. I was just like, oh, this is before anyone, they hadn't discovered marijuana, apparently.
I know. I was you're basically just describing what it's like when I get high. I don't.
Yeah.
But I also did experience all of that at an altar. So I laughed. I cried uncontrollably. I have passed out. I have come to with a bunch of people around me and hands on me. It's not a scary experience. Personally, for me, it wasn't scary. It was almost this for once in my life, ability to fully let go of control and just allow myself to feel feelings, whether that was tears coming out or laughter or just silence. That for me was like the first time that I learned how to be internal and meditate. I just associated that with that the only way that was happening was because of the spirit, because that's what they said, right? Is it the only way this is happening is that you're finally allowing the spirit to come, Holy Spirit to come into you, God, the big he one. And that without that, this feel, none of that's possible. So, externally for you though, witnessing those things, was it scary? Like, what was your, why did you resist it?
It made me deeply uncomfortable. I am just like my feet are on the ground. Like, I am just a highly logical. And I was just sort of like, it just gave me the heebie-jeebies. And frankly, my dad wasn't super into it. And so that gave me a little bit of an out that, like, of my parents, that they weren't in alignment on this. And I always wanted to be like my dad. I always felt like my personality was more in line with his. All of this stuff right now has been bringing up a lot of memories that I had forgotten. And I can't remember if I told you guys this, but with the Super Bowl just happening, I was remembering that my mom took her, we were living in Cody, Wyoming, and she took a minivan of her Bible study ladies and drove to the Anaheim Vineyard for a weekend conference and took little like eighth grader Lindsay. Wow. So it's me and a van full of like middle-aged women driving to California to go to the
middle-aged mom friends, like, are they in their early 40s and really cool?
I mean, I would say they're really cool. They're Christian women who live in white Christian women living in Wyoming who are driving to.
It's like not going with us. Okay, got just checking.
They were very nice. I remember that they were nice. And we went and we stayed with like family friends in Southern California. And I remember going to the conference. I was super pumped on parts of it. Like, Jackie Pullinger spoke, which I don't know if you guys remember her, read her biography, but I loved her. I remember my favorite worship leader was there, and I got to go to this little mini session because, of course, in eighth grade, you have a favorite worship leader. I actually Googled her the other day because I was like, I remembered her name was like Cindy. I was like, I remember Cindy. She like wrote these songs. All her songs felt really like haunting and like lovely.
What's she doing now?
She's still like very Christian.
Okay.
I mean, I love that I say that as a person who still identifies as Christian.
I know.
But
I'm
like, but she's like that kind of Christian.
What a journey.
If that makes sense.
It's all right. I know. I see you, but you are not mine, Cindy.
Yes. Cindy is not my people anymore. But I remember I was always just an observer of these things. And I loved the music. The music always like spoke to me in a way. And that's why I was like pumped to go to her little like quiet worship session. It was like in a side, it wasn't in the big like auditorium, it was a side room. And I remember that being lovely.
It's beautiful.
I honestly feel like I blocked out the part like if my mom got slain in the spirit, if the other lady said, I don't remember. I do remember we were like trying to leave to like go get lunch one day, and I had no interest in going down. I was never slain in the spirit. I never did the laughing. I did not go. I didn't respond to a single altar call that weekend. That's not my style. But I remember someone coming over and asking if they could pray for me as I think I was trying to leave.
That happened a lot too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Like God put
on
their heart.
I forgot about that.
And she just like prayed over me, I believe, in tongues for a long time.
Oh my God.
My mom is just standing there. And it's one of those things where then they just like give up eventually when nothing happens. You know, and I was like thankful. I was like, thank you.
You're like, cool.
But like, it's this weird thing of like, well, I'm not going to fake it. And I'm not feeling anything. So yeah, I have this very vivid memory. And again, the person...
Can I ask, really did she like ask you, did she just say, can I pray for you? Or do you
remember
any kind of a conversation?
A little bit. I don't remember it as like a horrible experience. Like they were nice and they did ask my permission to pray over me. But it just at the end, it felt like, ooh, you were like expecting something out of this and I did not give you. Like I just felt like I kind of I was always a little bit of a disappointment, frankly. hence the like doubting Thomas prophecy. So because I just never fully bought in, I think. Like I was, again, my skepticism, I'm telling y'all, go through life with a healthy amount of skepticism. It will save you at least from some religious trauma. Okay, this is the hill that I will die on. So fast forward, take that little like personality nugget to the Bible Institute of Los Angeles in the year 2000.
Viola, we're coming. We are coming for you. Here it goes.
So Biola, the college I chose because it wasn't as lit. My other top choice was Point Loma in San Diego, but I toured it and I decided that it was too liberal. I decided that they were not like God-fearing enough. So
they
Yeah, I chose Biola.
Did they let boys and girls in the same rooms without it being scheduled and doors open?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's a good no. So I still lived on campus in the year 2000. I think I was graduated high school in 99, so I was like young in my college years. And I will say, so chapel attendance was required at Biola. I think it was like three times a week you had to go. And we had like a...
Three times a week chapel?
Yeah, it was a lot.
That's like a class. Did you get credit for that? There's like a 12-unit class.
No. No, but you get... So if you miss chapel, though, you had to go back and listen to chapel tapes and you had to submit... What? Yeah, so and then you had to submit like a report. You had to like answer questions about the chapel if you missed it.
At my school, did it get graded?
No, but it was just
it's about attendance.
It's attendance. So like if you didn't hit X amount of chapels, you just couldn't graduate. So a lot of people who wouldn't go would then at the end have to like listen to 40 chapel tapes.
Wow. And did you guys do parties like listening to like chapel things and writing?
Oh, we should have. I don't remember. Yeah. I know a friend of mine like started some sort of chapel tape scam or like there was something.
Yeah, like I'll listen to these three. You listen to those three.
Yeah, there was something.
Yeah.
But mostly what I did was the old slide and glide is what we called it at Biola. So we had a card that we would slide when you walked into the chapel. And so it was big. You know, there's a lot of people. Yeah. It was like in a gymnasium. And so what I would do is I would go sit for about 5 minutes and then I would exit through a different door. I would cough or take a phone call or had to go to the bathroom.
Had to
and
pee.
You didn't have faculty roaming the halls making sure you were staying in chapel because we did at my school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was kind of people at the doors, but no one seemed to care that much. Yeah. I was a slide and glider for sure. And I tried, you know, I would go sometimes. And I'm a rule follower. And so, like, I would say once a week, I truly attended chapel. The other times, you know, maybe.
If you missed 10 chapels, I think it was 10 in a semester or maybe the year, you would basically be kicked out of school. But I did end up getting an excuse for one of the chapel days when I had a job and I had to work on that day. So they were like, okay,
yeah,
go earn money. Handy. That's almost as holy as being here.
Okay, so
how did you I want to know Biola how this Lindsay, how did the Lindsay we know show up at a revival at Biola? How did this even happen?
Right. Well, so first of all, I will say I had completely forgotten about this revival. I forgot it happened until this Asbury revival thing, and I was like core memory unlocked. I was like, holy shit. We had one at my college, and I actually went on Facebook, which I'm not on a lot anymore, and posted. I was like, hey, former Biolans, do you guys remember? Because I couldn't remember what year it was, and I was like, does anyone else remember this? Like, how many days did it go on? What? So I, lots
was
of people
it, was
chimed
it
in.
Internet? It was like kind of pre-internet-ish, right?
None of us were on Facebook.
Nothing had gone viral
MySpace.
Ever.
We
was
had
it MySpace
cell phones,
world?
But this is like when we were all playing like Snake on our Nokias, you know? Yeah. Sorry to age myself here.
When
I mean,
it was
this
T9
is,
texting.
Right. So this is the year 2000. And
spoiler,
that's
the year I was getting married. So our lives were a little different. I want to know what you were up to, though.
Well, I was living on campus at Biola. So I think because I was living on campus, I just happened to be at chapel this day.
It was the one out of three you went to?
One out of three. Magic. What are the chances? The Holy Spirit was coming for me. And a speaker, apparently. So this is the part I had to go look up and... Thankfully, I did find an article on the Biola revival. It's not anything
was it
like that.
From the Biola newspaper, or was this?
It's from Charisma Magazine, whatever that.
Okay,
may be.
Same. But, that's basically
yeah. So it talks about a spiritual awakening and campus revival continues to rock the Bible Institute of Los Angeles University, a leading Christian university started 92 years ago. Blah blah blah. So apparently. There was a revival at Biola in the 70s. So it said a similar awakening occurred during the 1977-78 school year and that former students from that era had been praying for years for God to do it again. Didn't know this until now, until the Charisma magazine. And so apparently that year, 77 and 78, a student was killed in an accident, and they made the announcement in chapel, and it caused a student chaplain to kneel down at the altar, and he was soon joined by the whole student body confessing sins. So why a kid died leads to everyone going down to the altar.
Sin confession.
Right. So this is what happened.
Can I guess, was this a life so short you could die any day? This student probably died.
Right. And you don't want to go to hell. Okay. Yeah, you don't want to go to hell. So that's that's what I think.
It sounds illogical as a conclusion when I don't think about the path that they can walk very easily into fear of your own death and eternal damnation. And we don't know if this guy was really saved or not. So get your heart right.
Here, this is what, last night I came across this quote and it took every fiber of my being not to text it to you immediately, but I was like, I know I have to like read it to you on the podcast because it blew my mind. So this is a quote from a student that attended the 78 revival. I've never witnessed so much pain and tears ever before. Many students express shame, guilt, and fear for their struggle with sin. I ask, even plead, that you would pray for Biola. Pray for a revival that would purge our community of sin and would awaken us to God's heart for the lost, the poor, and the unreached. Hang on. It goes on. So that's the quote from the student. This is the author's response to that. Students could be seen in agony, weeping for sins that would not normally trouble even the most earnest Christian. It was as if the standard had been raised, and what previously would not have bothered one's conscience suddenly became unbearable. So strong was the convicting power of God. Ugh. Holy fuck, right?
Literally, makes space. I wish you guys life. It's like them like saying things, every single thing that you have chosen or done, you need to agonize over, and it was horrible and it was sinful, and we're going to figure out how to shame you for every single decision you've ever made.
Yeah. It sin really, that would not normally trouble the most earnest of Christians, suddenly becomes all consuming and you're weeping over.
What does that mean? That's like I jaywalked, I littered. I mean, like the depth of shame that is coming at, and for young people, for people who are just like in the crux of like figuring their shit out in life. Like, they barely, who, like, they're barely aren't adults
having sex, but like,
and
should
they don't
be
have their frontal lobe.
They're not
lobe
even doing, like, at this point in my life, I'm not drinking alcohol. I'm not doing drugs. I'm not having sex. I might say a curse word occasionally.
You're honest.
I've always had a potty
friend
mouth.
Like, you have.
I'm listening to primarily Christian music. I'm going to a Christian college. I'm attending church regularly. But I do slide and glide at chapel. I do slide and glide at chapel. So that's sinning.
Relationship with Jesus Christ. Because you can do all of those works, but if your heart isn't connected to baby Jesus Christ, then you're not really a Christian.
I'm
you're just
gliding through life.
You're just trying to get your salvation through works. And not by faith.
So wait,
you can't win.
Easy.
You can't fucking win.
You literally
win.
Can't. Mm. So this 77-78 revival at Biola sets the stage for the revival of 2000.
So apparently, am I hearing this right? That the 78-79 participants have been praying
for this
for
to happen
20
again.
Plus years. They're like continuing this prayer of,
because apparently it was such an amazing, magical thing. And so then apparently at this day that I go to chapel, the speaker references revivals that have happened at other places, other churches, other schools. And I remember this clearly. I couldn't remember what he said until I looked up the article. And again, I went on Facebook to kind of ask because I was like, this is what I remember, and was kind of corroborating it with other people. And it was interesting because a lot of my friends at Biola were like a year or two older. And so they like missed it. They were living off camp, you know what I mean? Or they had graduated. Like it was interesting of my friends who remembered and who didn't. But the chapel speaker's talking about revival, and a guy stands up in the middle of chapel and just yells like loudly and like full of emotion and pain. Like, why can't it happen here? Why can't God do that here? And he's sobbing, and he just doesn't. And he's just like, and he starts confessing his sins, and he starts like calling for people to join him, and that like God needs to meet us in revival. And it kind of threw everyone off. And I think the speaker, as I remember, was kind of like, was trying to give space to him. And at some point, it just became an altar call. he came down and people, I think people came down to pray for him, but then more and more people. And then it just became days of public confession.
Wow. That's like take a microphone and
announce. So everyone would, people just formed a line in the gym and they would take their turn walking up to the podium and confessing their sin. And classes were canceled or made optional. This happened for a day. As I recall, it was like a week. And I was there for that day. And I remember feeling in that moment, I didn't confess anything. It's shocking, I know. but I remember feeling at the beginning sort of like, it was powerful to watch this guy, you know, so obviously like struggling with some stuff. So I kind of that week would pop in to kind of see what was going on and then I'd leave. And I remember because I just was curious, like, how is this going? And, you know, there would be some background music, but mostly it was just a lot of really awkward public confession and people airing wow. things that they should not be and saying awkward, like a lot of sexual sin, a lot. Yeah. And it was like, is this like a humble brag? Are people just... You know, like talking about how many women that they've boned before they got redeemed and came to Biola, obviously. I remember a guy bringing a pair of women's underwear up to the podium.
With him?
With him and like holding it up as an example of like he would keep a pair of women's underwear after he like slept with them or something. And he had a drawer full of these or something and he had to confess. And it was just like, whoa, it was so gross. Ooh. And so it just made me, again, deeply uncomfortable. And that's I was just like, lot. Why is this a thing you're sharing to hundreds of people in an auditorium? Like, that doesn't feel
a question.
Yeah, I see that hand, Meg. I see that hand.
Were there support staff like there? Were there people who you could go to for asking questions or get pastoral or was this more care? Of a if this person is crying, then everyone kind of will go to the That's my experience. It's just like none of us are equipped for this.
Right.
But there are people that are hurting or people that need support, emotional support. And so I'm just going to go and be a physical, you know, energy around them. Laying on of hands obviously happened a lot. But like there weren't people equipped to have these conversations. So it feels like the declaration was the end of it. It's like you declare these things and then you move on and the next person declares their sin and then you move on. It's not as though they then moved into a counseling or therapy conversation.
Oh, right? Gosh, no. I mean, I think that there were people there. I think just it was, again, other students. I'm sure teachers were there to like pray over people. Again, I did not really like being prayed over. It made me uncomfortable. So that was not a thing I was engaging in. I remember going to class after, because I was also the person that was like, you know, classes were optional, but I was like, nah, I'd rather be in class than be at this revival at a certain point. And I remember, you know, the professors were trying to tread lightly. And again, everyone was like trying to give space, but it was this very weird thing that no one kind of knew what to do with. And I think
I think with revivals, there inherently in them, there is no plan.
No.
They're kind of just like, we're going to let God... But there is a plan.
Unless you go to a planned one, you know? Like you did, Meg.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. I'm like, there's very many parts.
Is it right. planned versus not planned? Are we being thoughtful of these people? Are we just having like a, I mean, because that can be a trauma and re-trauma experience to continually hear people's, quote, sins or things that they're ashamed of or things they're being shamed for.
Right.
And then you're going to judge them, hearing these things about people and being like,
well, I view you differently.
Now I'm going to never
because I know all that. This weird dirt about you. And I know that you keep women's underwear and that I don't like it. So, yeah, it's a lot and maybe it's should not be shared on a microphone from a podium in front of a bunch of people. Yeah, that revival. Like why I specifically wanted to talk about it is because it reminds me a ton and why I haven't watched any of the fucking TikTok videos because I have the ick about that revival. And I can't tell you why other than I think that public confession is creepy, but also because
exploitation as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I look back and what changed
at
Biola? Because the point of revival is I understand it is to invoke big changes. And all that happened is that people felt worse about themselves. Maybe they felt better in that moment. I do know, obviously, like, there is something compelling about these revivals. There's a reason why these are happening. And people feel these bonds with one another. And it's deeply emotional. And I would argue that it's deeply manipulative. Whether people not, you know, I don't think the Biola thing, no one was trying to manipulate one another. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it truly did just come about at random. It wasn't planned. And there is something, you know, I'm tempted to say there's something beautiful about that. But if the result was like, you know, you will know a tree by its fruit. And like, nothing changed at Biola. We didn't put programs in to help people. We didn't serve the poor. We didn't, you know, like, we felt better about ourselves for a hot minute because God came to our school and we were special.
What could be more American than having a revival that is literally for you to consume feeling better and then nothing else? Like, literally, it's just, that's for me, thank you. And then it doesn't translate into any collective movement in a different direction. Can I just take us down like a really specific evangelical of the 2000s rabbit trail? Because
yes,
when
please.
You describe, oh, you know it. The moment when in chapel somebody was talking about revivals somewhere else and a guy stood up and said, screamed, yelled, why can't God do that here? Did you ever go to like a Dave Bazan show between, I don't know, like 2005 and 2015? Because I'm going to tell you something.
8 million of them? A lot of them? Yes.
Did you run into that exact dude times a million? Where like there was that period of time where like Dave would just answer people's questions. Like all the sad boys were like, why doesn't God really exist? And he'd be like, I don't know, man. Like just whatever. I feel like he's one of those guys. I think he just needed to be at a Bazan show. The end. And for those of you who aren't clear on who this is, it's Pedro the Lion. So y'all, come on.
Pedro the Lion, the patron saint of deconstruction.
Correct. And of the sad boys who didn't know how to do it by themselves and spurred revivals at Biola. And a lot of me being like, oh my God, get a therapist. And they never
would. Yeah. If I could go back, it would be a really great thing for all those people just go to therapy and instead of confessing their sins publicly. Yeah. So maybe that wasn't the tea y'all were looking for. I don't have any dirt on like the speaker. What I mean by tea is like, I just trying to bring you there, what it was like. And frankly, it, like I said, I had just forgotten about it. And I think that that says a lot. Like, I didn't want to remember that. Oh, yeah, my school also had a revival and it was weird. And that's why I feel weird about. And I'm big on like, I don't want to yuck anybody's yum. And I'm not there in Kentucky. And there is part of me that's like, yeah, there are probably people taking away good things from this. Some people, I'll give them. But at the end of the day, what is it doing? Like, who is it changing? Which I guess we can move into. So this episode isn't really about the revival that's happening or was happening. I think they just shut it down. Ooh. Because the crowds, the crowds were getting so large, and like they were saying like 50,000 people came to town. It's like a town of 6,000 people. What? And so they decided after 13 days of like continual student-led revival, like 24-hour praise and worship, they decided they're trying to like move it off campus somewhere else, I believe. And for on campus, like they're not stopping the worship, but they're limiting it to 25 and under people because someone said something like that this revival is about Gen Z, about Jesus reaching Gen Z. And so they want to continue that. So just so you know, Jesus wants Gen Z. He's already got the boomers. Like he's, and us millennials, like we're just lost. We're all deconstructed. No. So the hope is in. It's funny though, because I was talking to my husband last night about this and I was telling him how security concerns, I was like, that does make sense if you have 50,000 people like in a church gathering. I could see that being a, you know, scenario, a mass shooting scenario. And then I was like, oh, wait, but like it's usually the white Christians that are like shooting the other people not getting shot.
Yeah.
Like dark.
It hasn't really been in the news that there's a white congregation of people that are being intimidated by someone else. It's It yeah. sounds like a thing that they think happens all the time, but it hasn't. In reality, it hasn't happened. But it is interesting that that would be a concern that people would have, that they actually are like, wait a minute, there's a lot of people gathering here doing a thing that they like doing. Is this an opportunity for a mass shooter? And my hope is that that kind of idea would extend to other people who congregate and other people who want to just go to the grocery store or go to their synagogue or go to their place of worship and not be intimidated. So it is interesting that that has become a part of the conversation around this revival, safety from gun violence, which I think is meaningful and maybe people should pay attention to it.
I mean, yeah, the fact that it's not even necessarily a false persecution narrative. It's like, well, no, actually, you're just kind of being smart in this instance. But I think the one thing that I would love to ponder is, why are evangelicals so obsessed with revival? What is it? And maybe we've covered this already. You know, what are our thoughts? And also, what are they trying to get out of it? And then I'm curious, because now other revivals are popping up around Kentucky, right? So other colleges are having these. And I guess the thought is like, so can you just like make it happen through sheer willpower? Be like, well, it's happening in Kentucky, so we're going to go over here. And
you know? The answer is yes. You can plan it. You can order a tent. You can get people to bring all the things you need to support this, you know, spiritual awakening. I mean, I just wish they would just call it what it is, which is like, we're losing members. We got to get more. Let's go after the young people.
That's always the playbook. One of my good friends who I went to college with has some comments about the Asbury revival. And she's a professor, just a brilliant person who I've always admired and loved a lot. So I wanted to share her comments about the Asbury revival, because I think it also speaks to this bigger question of who is this for and what purpose does it serve? Does it actually allow real spiritual awakening, or is it a way for Christians who are already indoctrinated in that way to have that reinforced and to have that confession of sins or whatever the thing is that's sort of driving people to be there? That's a catharsis, but isn't necessarily actually transformative. She said, triggered by the Asbury revival conversation for so many reasons. I hope for everyone's sake that if there is any kind of awakening, that it is an awakening to the truths of this world, especially the truth of our complicity in harm, like racism, patriarchy, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, Christian exceptionalism, quote, we're the good and right ones, end quote, saviorism, martyrdom, emotional repression, binaries, paradigms of control using manipulation, coercion, intimidation, and punishment, and I could go on, hoping we can all wake up and see through the illusions of the world and of us. That's a good revival.
Yeah. Amy. Amen to that.
Thanks, Amy.
Do we see that coming out of Kentucky? I think not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Doesn't seem like it.
And I know that they're chasing a feeling, and it's something that we all want. And like we were saying, especially coming out of a pandemic, like the need for human connection and for connecting on a spiritual level with people, and like feeling like you're special and you're rising up to do something great. Like, it's American exceptionalism meets religion, you know, it's all the things. And it's interesting, my husband last night, he said something, I like wrote it down because we were talking about revival and like why people want it. And he said that it's like trying to hold a sunbeam, like you can't actually hold it and it was never yours to begin with. And that like just struck me of like, we're trying to grasp these things that are ungraspable. And in that, we're kind of creating, I don't know if it's mass hysteria, but, you know, it's like we're creating this emotional experience where you're not actually grasping anything. Nothing is changing. It isn't yours. And I want people to have spiritual experiences. I want people to experience change and whatever that may be. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with prayer and worship. And I'm glad, you know, that these students felt like that they were able to start this thing. But it so quickly becomes gross. Like, it just, I don't know that there's a way to do it without it being totally entrenched in guilt and shame and hell and all of these things that I find deeply problematic. So,
yep.
I don't know that we need to answer that question. Can there be a good revival? Like, can it be positive? Can change come? Like, I want to believe that. And I don't want to be a skeptic about everything forever, okay? I want to be a glasses half full gal occasionally.
I will say this. I think that kind of thing happens in movements all the time where people get, you know, awakened to something and they find each other and they do create massive change over time, like revolutionary change. But when we're talking about this being contained within an institution that is by nature incurious, by nature coercive, by nature spiritually abusive, this, of course, it can't transcend that when there are going to be people in charge who are very interested in maintaining the status quo. That is like the job of the administration, of the trustees, of whoever else is in charge at Asbury or beyond. Like, this is not possible because it's not open. But when we have those experiences as individuals with awe and wonder, or when we learn, oh my God, I have friends who are gay. Maybe I shouldn't be such a jerk to gay people, and like whatever, you know, those are things that can change a shift a little bit. But this level of like major world change, once again, what Amy said is the opposite of what those revivals are usually about, which is what I mentioned earlier, like making it a safer world for Christians to never be offended by anyone else's thinking or choices or what they wear or whatever. Like, Top's so modest, he'll be like, what's a boob? That's a quote from a funny meme I saw.
I love it.
Lindsay, you said it. You know, you don't want to yuck someone else's yum. I don't want to have any negativity towards a positive experience that someone has. If I could say anything to all of these students or people participating in this, I think it would just be to take time to walk away from the mass emotion that is happening around you and take some solitary time to really look inward and ask yourself, what are the things that I am going to be changed after this experience? We each have a responsibility, not only to ourselves, but to the people that we interact with all the time, to reflect on our own past. And rather than expressing our sins, you know, at a pulpit and a microphone, to really just decide for me, who do I want to be? How do I want to show up? And how do I want to treat others? And I'm going to fuck it up. But if I can keep going inward and keep asking myself, who do I want to evolve to be? What kind of a person, you know, do I want to show up to be in this world? And how do I want to affect my community in a way that is not selfish and not self-serving? And that's my hope, is that anyone who is experiencing a personal revival, a personal awakening, and whether that is your personal intuition or your connection to God or a spiritual higher power, find that one-on-one place to connect to spirit. And yeah, I guess block out everything that other people are telling you you should be or shouldn't be. You're the person that you go home with at the end of the day. So it does matter. It does matter that I want to become a better person. And I hope that those students are finding ways of taking that experience and then making it practical, making it something that they can physically change or do in their own world.
And I hope and I pray that at least some of these students' experiences are like centered in love and in grace, and not in this guilt and this shame. And whether it be like the love of God, whether it's the love of your community or self-love. I think that's the thing about the revivals that I have experienced, is a lot of self-hatred.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that messaging of like, you're a piece of shit, but God can save you. It's like, but God loved you so much that he gave his only begotten boy.
Yeah.
Like, it's super confusing. And I think that like radical love and acceptance is where change starts and is where revival can happen, whether that be in yourself and in your community. And as my hero RuPaul likes to say, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you gonna love anybody else? So
good question.
That's the gospel. The gospel reading for today is from RuPaul 2:15.
Listen, I would replace all of the Pauline epistles with RuPauline epistles. Okay.
Yes.
I would like
that's
to
the new apostle
that.
Paul, the apostle RuPaul.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only apostle Paul I will recognize as Apostle RuPaul.
Yeah. That sounds, man, that just made my heart swoon.
That's beautiful. I have one last thing to say, too, is I agree with both of you. Like, I'm being really, really rude about this because I have seen it as extremely manipulative and very self-centered in a way that isn't necessarily helpful to you or anyone else. So when I think about this and I look at what could be the fruit of a revival, of this awakening, of some more awareness of yourself and of whatever it is about yourself that you would like to adjust, instead of just letting it be a one-time emotional experience that you have, really interrogate that experience and ask yourself, what more do I need to learn? What questions arise for me about how I have been living and the assumption I'm making about who to vote for or what I want to be when I grow up or whatever it might be? Am I being kind to people who are trans? Am I being kind to people who are gay? Am I being kind to people who are unhoused? Am I being kind to the least of these? Judgmental, but still Jesus said it, so you should care about it.
If that's where you're going to start, at least start somewhere.
If you're at a fucking revival, go ahead and listen to what Jesus is saying and go home and read all of the things Jesus said in the whole Bible and write down any parts that you're like, what? Because there will be some if you're really doing it.
And you will notice that he doesn't actually say revival ever. So,
oh, no, he never does.
He didn't say it.
No, he's just like, y'all need some fish and bread. Let's do that. This seems cool.
Meat Jesus didn't ask for revival. And did Jesus make revival happen?
You know what Jesus did? He came to this earth and said, I am the Son of Man, and I've came to fulfill the law. And everyone's like, what? We should worship this guy. And sometimes when I read the Bible and I see Jesus say, I'm the Son of Man, I see him say, and so can you. And I think we all are, I am. We're all the siblings and nibblings of God in whatever form that takes. But I think, honestly, again, like just back to the revival stuff, a lot of this is the follow-up work that you get to do with yourself. And please don't just put a lid back on it and move on. That's why people don't grow. Let it be open for a little while and take some time with it.
And maybe go to therapy.
And definitely go to therapy.
And definitely go to therapy. We definitely highly, highly recommend therapy. Maybe don't do your therapy publicly on a microphone in front of a bunch of 20-year-olds.
Great idea.
Just saying.
That's highly recommend. That's a thought. Also finding a therapist who's not a Christian. Scary, I know.
Although my therapist who's not a Christian is sometimes, I think, just baffled by the things that I tell her. So there is that.
That actually might be a good experience for most people to be like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? And then you're like, oh, that really was weird.
Just wait till I tell her about the revival. I can't wait. I can't. I'm going to email her right now and be like, guess what? I get to unpack. All right. We can wrap this thing up. Do you want to close us out with an altar call to support our Patreon? Mm-hmm.
Hey, if all you ghosties out there like what you're hearing, come on down to the altar. We're on patreon.com/holyghosting.
You can get access to all kinds of fun things for starting at only $5 a month. And if you really want to help us out, go to 10. And if you really want to actually support it, you know, I mean, live large, do whatever you want.
Just give whatever the spirit is leading you to give.
Yes.
Remember to tell all your friends who are disentangling from their own trauma at their culty childhood lives to come join us. We'd love to have you here.
We're here for it, and we're here for this, and we appreciate all the support.
And this has been Holy Ghosting. We'll see you next time, ghosties.
Holy Ghosting is supported by our patrons, and there's even more ways to support the show. Rate, review, and share every episode. Holy Ghosting is a Same Team Media production. Our producer is AP Weber. Join the conversation on socials, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Holy Ghosting Pod. I'll fix it.
Perfect.
Excellent. I love everything.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.